Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are going to do a little recap of the Cavs' new bubble documentary series in the first segment, and then segments 2 and 3 are going to be chapters 9 and 10, respectively, of Boys Among Men, Jonathan Abrams' book, as we continue this book club. That's all coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers. Your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him tonight at the cue.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
Evan, as we're going to just do every Friday now because we didn't do it other days this week, and I just want to inject some positivity into the world, just give me something real quick that you feel good about right now as we're kind of talking.
Oh, golly.
What has brought you some joy?
This is a broad question for me. I have something that's kind of like an announcement-y thing. Let me pull up the official script here. I'm super excited to share that I've joined Quoted as a member of their media advisory board to help uphold ethical standards and support reporters and young journalists as best as I can. There's my news for Friday. How about you, Chris?
Well, that's much more professional than me.
Well, that and the PlayStation 5 is supposed to be coming out October 30th, and that's like 15 days sooner than I expected, so I'm pretty stoked about that.
I have two things. One is serious, one is not. Number one, I'm not going to reveal the breadth of the story yet, but I have a feature that I'm pretty excited about.
Yeah.
That I think will be pretty instructive, that I know, you and I talked about it, and I feel like when you were like, this is a good idea, and other people that whose opinions I value were like, this is a good idea. I feel good about that. And that's just like a valuing feeling sometimes when you do reporting, because a lot of times, especially when with this team, there's just sometimes stuff where you're just like, why am I wasting my time on this? And then secondly, I'm reading the OG New Mutants run, and it's just like, I love the 80s. Just incredible shit.
Chris, are you one of those people that thinks like you're born in the wrong generation?
Okay, no, 100% God. No, because I have like a technology problem, so like I definitely would have, if you put me in like the 50s, I'd be like,
yeah.
Well, the only thing that's good with the 50s is that wealthy people got taxed at a fair rate.
Are taxed at a fair rate. We didn't know the horrors of tobacco. And
I mean, smoking's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Smoking's not cool. Evan, before we dive into this in-market bubble thing, I guess we should just touch on the only bit of Cavs news that's out there, and that's that the Cavs are expected to pursue Derrick Jones Jr. in free agency. This isn't new news per se, but Shams Charania reported it in his column in a kind of news rundown column on Thursday. It's been out there for a while. I know you and I have both heard this. Chris Fedor has reported this as well. I'm going to just tell the listeners, I made a big planning sheet, and we're going to do like little capsules on different free agents. Mm-hmm. And the second one we're going to do is Derrick Jones Jr.
Yeah.
It will be the second one on the list. It'll be next Wednesday. So be on the lookout for that. But do you have any just initial, just quick takes on this reported interest?
Well, first off, how dare you? There's a second piece of Cavs news that's major. But first, Derrick Jones.
What am I missing? Ty
Lue's the head coach of the Clippers, so round of applause for Ty.
Okay. Yeah, good job for Ty. Best place for him. Jordan Zerm's writing about it for the Nels Woman down to the newsletter on Friday. That is the extent we're probably going to talk about. We'll be on Locked On Clippers, though, about it. At least one of us.
Yeah, we'll be gracing your ear holes on Locked On Clippers. Maybe we'll drop the episode here as well, but we'll see. But Derrick Jones Jr., the Cavs have a dire need for wings, especially defensive ones. Derrick Jones Jr. is a defensive-minded wing, is another good example of Miami growing their own talent through their development system. And hey, if he I know it's between Cleveland, Charlotte, and Atlanta, but all three teams have space to sign him, and all three are kind of mediocre teams that all have a problem with perimeter defense, so hopefully he likes Cleveland the most, so fingers crossed, right?
Well, yeah, and I think there's some concern about his fit in all these situations. I think anytime you pull a guy out of a really good situation like Miami, I think there's definitely some risk in terms of what you might get out of him. So I think that's kind of a concern. If I were the Cavs, I would kind of wonder about that. I think the other just note is, you know, the Cavs could get outbid here, because if you look at Atlanta and Charlotte, they both have Atlanta like is just flooded with cap space. Charlotte can pretty easily get to a lot of cap space. The Cavs cannot.
Yes.
So like they could get outbid. The Cavs can offer the max they'll be able to offer is the full mid-level, which is it'll be about $9.75 million. Charlotte and in Atlanta, were they wanting to, could beat that number. Now I don't think he's worth like a significantly much more than that. If Jeremy Grant's looking for 15, Derek Jones Jr. should like not get close to that. But if he asks for 11, 12, I don't think that's like the craziest thing in the world, considering he's 23 and you could hope he would still improve and whatever. So we'll see if the price is ultimately right. I wonder if there's other options for the Cavs, or if there's even really need to kind of spend that on a guy like that. I get the idea of it, but I was like, when I was writing the news post about this, there's just a lot of guys that I think the Cavs at least like, and even if he's an improvement on someone, you know, I don't think the Cavs should necessarily rush it, and we'll see what the... I guess, well, and this is getting way too ahead of ourselves, mm-hmm. but I think it's at least worth kind of monitoring as we dive into free agency.
No, for sure. I guess it's nice to see that there's a player that's on the Cavs radar that makes sense, and I applaud it. Like when we were talking with Martin about this, you know, listen to our episode with Martin Rickman, everyone. Part 2's coming soon. We don't need to be adding more big men. We need to be pursuing wings, and Derek Jones Jr. is exactly that. But speaking of the Cavs and they're here, let's talk about the road back. I'm enjoying it so far. I think it's nice to wet my whistle a little bit with like a nice 13-minute snippet of content. What do you think of it, Chris?
Yeah, my take on this is that as much as I don't always love team and broadcast affiliate partner team content, one of the things that I would like to maybe see is like teams actually do some more stuff with their access and the stuff they're filming. And I understand this isn't always going to be the case. It's a lot of labor to do these things well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you did something like this throughout the course of this season, I think it would be interesting. And maybe if you like one of the old like newspaper tricks is to have like a player do like a running diary. Like Sabrina Ionescu was doing a running diary for the AP, of all places, weirdly, for her rookie season, at least until she got injured, if not a little bit after. And I think this could be like a modern way of kind of taking that and making it more accessible, putting it out on platforms. Look, I can tell you, like, the Cavs social media team, we've praised them a bunch. They're like well thought of in a way that is actually like kind of impactful, not for like the basketball side per se. I don't think that's like a thing that comes up necessarily. But in terms of them as like a brand, in terms of them like developing revenue that will kind of help them navigate this, like that is something that really does benefit them. And I think they're really skilled at the digital side.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like, I think it'd be interesting to see if they kind of could do this stuff for, you know, in the regular season, you know, maybe like every week you focus on different, but like, I think there's really cool stuff you could do with a format like this, but I agree. And I think the most impactful stuff was really the, as to be expected, was really the players and the coaches. You know, talking about the current push for human rights, as Larry Nance and JB both said to us, for people in the country over the summer and everything that went into that and how they were affected.
No, it really is interesting, and sometimes it does feel like a little bit of like fluffing, since you know it's a Cavs controlled narrative. But like it was, I don't know. It's good to have content for us to discuss again. I think it's like our big thing for us, and I do know for those who watched and enjoyed it, the next episode will probably be closer to the end of October, early November, to kind of get people hyped up for the draft. But Chris, you know, besides like the overarching things, or like they talk about how the coronavirus is just kind of an uncertain thing. This was back in March when we didn't really know the severity of the situation, to how it shut everything down and all the initial uncertainties, to now like how all the precautions the Cavs are taking just feel part and parcel of everyday life, to the civil rights movements. You know what also really stuck out to me?
What?
Cleveland's last game was that super frustrating one against Chicago, and I kind of want to go back and listen to that episode, because I think you and I both were just like super annoyed after that game, because it was a very winnable game for Cleveland from what I remember. And like Andre Drummond had a great night, and I had a lot of praise for him, but like, yeah, the starting five was Deli, Jetty, Andre, Colin, and Kevin, with Larry Nance, Alphonso McKinney, and Matt Mooney off the bench. So the Cavs were like depleted. And I didn't think they were going to win. And then they were lead, or they were in it until the end, and then it just kind of a couple miscalculations, and you know, they lost in the most Cavs way possible. But like, I just remember us both being really frustrated after that game.
I don't remember March, just, you know, weird times.
I do. Animal Crossing just came out, so I'm like, hey, if I have to stay home, that's fine.
Yeah, this was pre me becoming an addict. Andre Drummond had 21-7 in this game. Kevin had 17-8.
And 7.
You know, and 7. Colin had 26-5 assists in this game. This is kind of, I think, a continuing part of his run of just being, like, really, really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously Darius was out with a knee injury at this time. And there's definitely some contextual stuff. Like, seeing Matt Mooney played 13 minutes is just, like,
wild.
Very funny. Yeah. Because of all the people to randomly get minutes, like, that's obviously going to happen in the course of an NBA season. And then it's like, you look at the Bulls, it's not like, you know, there was no Zach LaVine in this game. And this was Kobe White dropping 20, but not even on super efficient shooting. This was Markkanen having 15 and four starters in double figures, and Otto Porter providing 15 off the bench. Like, this was, yeah, you're right, this wasn't a winnable game. Maybe when we go back and, like, watch some games and whatnot, you know, we'll have to kind of, this maybe will be on the list as something we go back and watch, just because,
get the old,
you know, it was a thing that actually happened and kind of was interesting.
Let's see if I need to take blood pressure medication after this one. But then, like, I just think it's an interesting transition, because, like, it lingers on that, and they ask Kevin the question, like, how do you think it's going to feel to probably possibly play in, like, an empty arena? He's like, oh, it'll feel weird as hell. And then it's, like, 6 months later, and then they announce, like, the Cavs aren't going to the bubble, and JB and the Cavs are pissed about that. And then they just start showing snippets of the in-market workouts, and yeah, you know what? It makes the optimist in me come back out, which is nice. So I also like Kevin Porter Jr. saying that the Cavs aren't just dogs; they have rats. So that's,
I don't know what that means.
It's, you know, hip with the vernacular, something I'm not cool with. But
I'm officially old if rats is, like, not just like a term in, like, a Scorsese mob movie about, like, someone that they're going to shoot in, like, two scenes.
I don't know. I'm going to Urban Dictionary it while we spiel here.
Well, we're not going to reference Urban Dictionary. You are not going to read that live on air. No, but we're going to take a quick break. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and we're going to talk about Chapter 9 of Boys Among Men right after this. All right, we're back here on Lockdown Cavs. I am Chris Manning. He is Evan Damerl. Evan, Chapter 9, I feel like this chapter for me, when I read it and reread it during the second reread, I feel like the Taj McDavid story and the Ellis Richardson story are not stories that I knew, and I would assume a lot of people don't know until they get to this book. It's one of the things that I think really makes this book work, because obviously, you know, you're getting KG, Kobe, LeBron, etc., but you're also getting these people that were part of this generation, but we don't know because they were not superstars on ESPN and on magazine covers and everything. I just find this chapter so instructive, and just seeing how, like, Taj McDavid, for instance, like, basically just gets an idea in his head that he can go pro. Is basically, like, everyone around him, like, knows this is probably a bad idea, or at least, like, the people that they're kind of referencing this book is sort of understanding what's going on, acknowledge, like, this is a bad idea. Wasn't even, like, a top, and then you look at Ellis Richardson, not even a top 100 guy, but goes undrafted and then ends up in prison for robbery.
He made me super sad, like, when he kept saying, like, my break's still gonna come when he gets out of jail. I'm like, oh, my heart. It hurts.
Like, there's this pull of the dream, and the way the system is set up is obviously, like, there's, like, this line between, like, personal choice and personal, I don't want to use the word liberty because that's loaded right now, but just that there's this, like, personal responsibility and choice you have to, like, make your own decisions, right? Mm-hmm. But there's also just, like, a lack of a system to, like, tell, like, someone, I feel, in my opinion, someone on the NBA side, and I think maybe you'll see this with the G League thing, and maybe now, like, this will be different if and when, you know, high schoolers can enter the draft again, but there should be, like, a more firm thing of someone being like, look, man, like, this is not a good idea for you. Like, we are telling you for a fact that you are going to go undrafted. You're going to ruin your college eligibility and all kinds of stuff that I feel like it should just be something acknowledging this. And that this chapter just is very sad, but also very informative.
No, it absolutely is. And I think, to your point, at least today with the conveniences of modern medicine and the fact that mental health and psychological well-being are being taken seriously as like a thing instead of, you know, the toxic masculinity tagline of just be a man or tough it out, stuff, shit like that. No, I think players, before they do this, will possibly get like a proper evaluation just to make sure they're mature enough to handle it. Plus this select program will help as well, where the NBA can put these kids in a structured environment for a full year and closely monitor them, and then like they can evaluate the processes. And I'm sure, I mean, now like players can take insurance policies out on themselves, or policies out on themselves in the event they do get injured, whether it's in college or whether it's in a program like this. Or I mean, with the advent of high school players being able to come in and join the league again, it's going to get a little murky, but we'll see what happens. But I also just think, like, Chris, let's just put it this way. I mean, when you were in high school, and I felt this way too, like, I had no choice but to go to college. Like, there were no other alternatives for me. It's like either you go to college or you're gonna be like just absolutely stuck in a rut for the rest of your life. Like I feel like that's just being ingrained in our culture and our like our generations coming up now. Like I wonder if a lot of these high school players are gonna be a lot more hesitant just because of the fact, like, hey, if basketball doesn't work out, I can at least get a full ride scholarship based on my ability and then make a career out of it that way. Like, I don't know, it's just a lot of interesting things to think about just in this day and age.
Yeah, and I think the money side of it is notable.
Oh yeah,
too,
there's because, financial like, pressure at, like, for sure.
Yeah, if you look at Taj McDavid, like there's also a really good Jeff Perlman feature about him that I read when I was doing some Googling after I'd read the chapter, and like he basically just like kind of ghosts himself from all these people, like his high school teammates and everything like that, and he's at least at the time of the story was like living in a mobile home, and not that there's nothing like wrong with living in a mobile home, but no. It's like, this is someone who dreamed of making millions of dollars, changing his life. And, you know, the system was set up at the time where, like, he could declare, and he's this putting up gaudy numbers in high school and stuff, but, like, no one had heard of him.
Yeah.
Literally no NBA scout knew who this guy was. And if this is someone who gets better advice, if this is someone who the system is actually there to, like, protect these players and protect them from various things and like actually give them,
them
honest information or people that are pushing them that way. Like, I think you need like some really brutal kind of accountability, and I think frankly, like, if you know, like, it's incredibly sad when like this these people had like, just because this was so new and they had this extreme self-belief.
That's true.
Mean, certainly a level, I think, a self-belief that I do not have. They go all in, and it obviously doesn't work. And there's something just very, like, tragic about that, because, like, we can hail Kevin and Kobe and all these guys and LeBron, but they're, like, almost the exception from this era, I think, is one of the underlying things here.
Yeah, once.
How many people know Sebastian Telfair? How many people know, like, Lenny Cook? And how many people... And then you get to the names you don't know, like Taj McDavid and Ellis Richardson.
No, that's absolutely true. And I'm jumping ahead now. It hit me while you were talking. You played high school sports, right, Chris? Did you file at the NCAA Clearinghouse in high school?
No.
Okay, well, I did because of wrestling, because I had a couple small colleges offering me scholarships. So then the NCAA did an evaluation and told my family, saying, like, okay, well, Evan could wrestle for a couple small schools if he wanted to, but he's not going to go to, like, a big school if he wants to get, like, his degree in something. And if, like, he's not passionate about doing, like, his chances of making, like, making Team USA and everything else were, like, out the window at that point, so... My decision became a lot easier to join the fine academic powerhouse that is the University of Akron. Other factors as well in that. But I don't know if that really became a thing till recently. But, like, I dog on the NCAA plenty, but they are up front with you. They tell you, like, okay, you have these paths, but your options are limited beyond that. Because I think they try to discourage kids, too, because everybody has that one kid in their high school at one point in their career. They're like, this guy's going to be the guy. He's going to be the difference maker. He's going to be awesome. Like, I went to high school with Bishop Sankey my freshman year. And Bishop Sankey went on to Gonzaga Prep. He played for Washington. He was a running back for the Titans, the Vikings, the Patriots, and I think the Chiefs. And now he's in the CFL because he could never pan out. I can almost guarantee you, from playing with him my freshman year of high school, everyone told him he was going to be the guy and he was going to be the difference maker. But like, but Bishop's parents kind of kept him grounded in that regard, too, and told him, like, well, football's not going to be everything as well. So... that's the other sad thing, too, is, like, there are so many people outside of these kids that are just toxic influences, and they also sometimes are just so in their head and in their belief in themselves so much that they just set themselves up to fail, and that's the real tragedy there too. Like, I don't know. I think it's super weak that if like a player like declares to go pro and like they signed with an agent, like they can't go back to college if they aren't drafted. Like, I think that's super lame. If you
no, it's a broken system. It's like incredibly just enfranchising for rich people that are making money on unpaid labor, which again is bullshit. I think with high school, it's like you obviously know people, but like the odds for even like the best guy in most high schools are like so thin. And even like when you think about guys that are like the best, like even if you just want to look at like that, once guys actually get to the point of being drafted, there is not like often linear projections to like number one guy in a class is then the best guy. Like, it does not work that way, and these things are crazy.
Yeah,
I don't want to read it yet, but there's a really good Jerry West quote about this in the next chapter that we'll get to.
No, absolutely. Maybe that's a good segue for us to jump into the next segment.
Yeah. All right. One more break here. We'll be back with more Locked On Cavs talking about chapter 10 of Boys Among Men. All right. We're back here. I'm Chris Manning. He's Evan Damerill.
What's good?
All right, Evan. Here's the Jerry West quote that I alluded to at the end of the last segment. This to me is maybe my favorite quote of the book. Potential is sometimes like if you don't take care of a nice car. If you don't take care of it and nurture it, pretty soon it's going to be a pretty bad car. These young kids really need a lot of attention in trying to steer them into areas that will help them achieve their goals, and many don't make it. I think this is so right.
Oh, yeah.
This chapter specifically is about Amari Stoudemire. There is a lot about Colangelo and them kind of like coming to understand him, and obviously we talked a lot in the Kobe chapters about Kobe and then KG and just kind of their mental makeup kind of making them able to succeed, and kind of how hard that can, I think, can be to quantify. It's sort of impossible to quantify as far as I'm concerned, but when I think about that chapter, I think, or that quote, excuse me, I think that's exactly right. I think Jerry West, the logo himself, kind of nails that dead on.
Well,
And I think it's just one of the things that is really hard to know. I just feel like no one at 18 is like, except for like LeBron apparently and Kobe and some of these elite people, like action was doing. Like, think about all the bad habits you had. I had trash habits at 18.
I had terrible habits at 18. I quit every sport I played when I was 18 because I wanted to go home and nap every day or eat Taco Bell with my friends. Like, if you put $1 million in my hand, I'll just want to nap all the time and eat Taco Bell breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But Taco Bell breakfast is garbage. But I thought another interesting quote was from Keith Drum, the scout of the Kings, when he said, "I saw Michael Jordan play in high school. Had he come out of high school as a player, our whole opinion of Michael Jordan would be different. He might have developed into a very nice player, but he wouldn't have come into the league and become a star right away." And it's just like that hesitancy, like with the guys we spoke about in the last segment, and coupled with the fact that like there's such a stigma with high school players to begin with. And like Jerry West said, like, you have to really make it your mission to maintain these players and make sure you don't lose your job because you took a gamble on a 18, possibly 17 or even 19 year old that you're kind of pitting your hopes of your franchise's future on. And like Kevin Garnett's a success story, or Amari Stoudemire ends up being a success story. But like, I think about like the Cavs now, like Kevin Porter Jr. is kind of like that success story for the Cavs. Like, the Cavs were on him constantly during the pandemic from what I heard. Like, they were checking in with him every day, making sure he was eating the right things, making sure he was working out and keeping like in shape and just with the right people. Like, that's what they've been doing this entire time. Like, they created a structured environment for him where they, one, hold him accountable, but two, just make sure they can't set him up to fail. So like, I don't know, I think a lot of franchises know that now, but like back then, I feel like that was just like a mind-blowing thing to like, oh, we have to like treat this kid like a kid until they really blossom into an adult.
Yeah, I think the KBJ thing is even true. If you want to, let's use him as an example. Like, him in the season, they were even like, there's a lot of, we're going to develop structure for this person.
Yeah.
We're going to help this kid figure it out. We're going to help him do that. And he's talked about that. It's I think, one of the things that, you know, every good good organizations do that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And it extends down into the G League, you know, I think in certain cases. And it's a lot of work. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of money. It's not a easy thing or a foolproof thing. A lot of times you may not exactly get everything going out of it, but I think if you're going to draft kids and you're going to draft people that otherwise would be like oversleeping classes in college or like doing stupid things in college, like you do when you're 18, 19, or eating like really, like heaps of bad dining hall food.
Because
like,
your metabolism's a lot stronger, and then it all stops one day.
Yeah, when you're like 20.
Yeah.
But yeah, but it's just like that is there, and like with Amari, it's just like there's so much more vetting. The only thing that made me feel icky about this chapter, Evan, is just like every time I read the word like psychological test.
Yeah.
Like that weirds me out because I don't know what that means.
I feel like it's a lot like the Wonderlic test, where like they try to test the IQ of players, and I feel like that's where the stigma. Like, I'll just outright say it, like the NFL is inherently racist because they think black people can't play quarterback because they don't think they're intelligent enough to play the position, which I think is bullshit. So that's what it kind of feels like psychological evaluations can do to make sure, like, oh, are you emotionally stable enough? Like, was your upbringing too hard for us to like take a chance on you because you were in a structured college environment where people profited off your labor for 2 to 3, because this was even before freshmen and like one and dones became a thing. Like, people were in college for 2 to 3 to 4 years at this point. Like, you were put through the rigors and trials of playing for free for your college's benefit, and then you get drafted, and then you can finally profit off your talent. So, like, I understand why these high schools are doing it, but I don't know. It feels icky.
And I think, too, like, I would like to know more. I think the reporting there would just be kind of interesting to see Amari reflect on it. But I think the thing, you look at this, and it's like you can tell that they understood when it was time to break the rules, right? Like, he came to understand that it was, like, with Amari and doing all the vetting and doing all of this, like, that's the right time when to break his rules, because Clenjo was not as someone who was in on taking prospects. And I think you have to do all that work to kind of understand who these people are, and I think teams probably understand that better now than they did at the time.
Yeah.
But it's certainly a thing, and I think, you know, I mean, if you want to get it through a modern context, I think that's one of the things I will find really interesting with the G League select team, because like I think we know that it's good. You and I are both of the opinion that like we know that it's good for the players. We are of the opinion that it's a good thing, but there are things we don't know about it. So like Brian Shaw's the head coach. There's I'm sure like gonna be an assistant, a deep assistant coaching staff. I don't know the exact names. You know, I don't know, like, how the data and the player tracking and all that stuff is going to work, because some of that stuff is already lesser at the G League. Is it going to be invested in more because guys like Jalen Green and Kuminga could be first-round picks or top 5 picks in this next draft? And all these guys, I'm sure, are hoping to be high draft picks in this next draft. So, like, how is that, all that information and that data going to be, you know, put into a situation where, like, these guys can then like get fair shots, and are like, what kind of access do teams have?
Yeah.
Like, because it is not something they absolutely control, but like, how are they going to do it? And then like, how do the backdoor connections? There's just like a lot about that I find quite interesting, of how like the teams themselves are going to approach.
No, definitely. The fact that there isn't going to be a G League season because of the pandemic makes it difficult. And I was talking to Ty about this, because he covers the Wisconsin Herd in Oshkosh very closely, and I'm like, well, what do you think they're gonna do? He's like, honestly, they're probably just gonna like make an all-star team of like the best G League players available, let them kind of showcase their talent for teams, and maybe NBA teams will use expanded rosters next year to let their G League guys kind of be available for them, because Canton won't be operating in the Cavs sense. But like, that'll be the way the select team operates. But it'll be interesting to see what the teams can and can't do, and like what the NBA, how they approach this. But I still think this is a step in the right direction, because this is promising kids guaranteed money. And I know the NBA has done some questionable things in the last few years in terms of like ethical stuff, but not going to go too deeply into that rabbit hole. But I do know, I feel like they do have these kids' best interest at heart. Like, they're not going to set them up to fail, and I think they're going to give them like honest evaluations. And it gets tricky because, since they're technically professional athletes now, they can't get a college scholarship because of this, because they can't declare amateur status. But I'm sure the NBA has some type of contingency plan in place if like a player, God willing, it doesn't happen, and like has like a catastrophic injury that like alters their career path, that allows them to continue their education or find some other avenue that allows them to support those, because they gambled all their talents to begin with.
Yeah, I think that's right. Just as we wrap up, Evan, do you have any Amari thoughts?
I'm just looking at Brian Colangelo's track record. He and the Cavs were buddy. He actually traded the Cavs Brevin Knight, did you know?
Yeah, I guess. Now I do.
No, but other than that, it's incredible to think that Kevin Garnett and Kobe both didn't win Rookie of the Year, and I'll have to go back and see who won Rookie of the Year in their respective draft classes. I guess Kevin Garnett was a little bit of a late blossomer because they had to set him, late bloomer, I should say, because they had to set him up to succeed. But, like, Kobe is, I guess Kobe as well, but, like, Kobe was a dog by his second year. But, like, Amari's ascension really helps cement the case for high school players to be a thing if they're mature and physically talented enough to be able to handle the rigors of the NBA. So it's definitely some unique stuff in there. What about you?
Yeah, he's obviously a really interesting guy, and he's a character and all of that. I think he'd be one of those guys that could do really well now if he was in the league. Mm-hmm. He'd be a center. I kind of see what he would look like in a modern context.
I mean, he could remember when the Cavs almost traded for Amari back when LeBron was here?
It's a big all-time.
Yeah, I mean, his degenerative knees could have been fixed by the Cleveland Clinic because they fixed my degenerative knee in high school, and Amari and I could have had like a real kindred connection, you know, and then Amari would be around long enough and David Blatt would be head coach, and maybe David Blatt doesn't get fired. I'm just spouting hypotheticals here, but like, it's a big what if. Like, the Cavs almost traded for Amari, and that would have been interesting to say the least.
Yeah, that's fair enough. All right, we're gonna end right there. Everyone have a good weekend. We'll be back on Monday with part two with Martin Rickman and a whole bunch of other fun stuff coming next week. I'll outline that at the intro Monday show, kind of what our plan is going to be going forward, at least through the draft and into free agency. The booklet will continue. Other stuff will continue as well, including some fun guests. And one guest we'll see. We're going to record after this and drops in a week, but it should be one of our more interesting episodes. Thanks everyone for listening. Subscribe, review wherever you listen to podcasts. Find Evan's work at Forbes. Both of us at Fear the Sword, and submit us mailbag questions for Fear the Sword as well. And we'll probably do a mailbag here on the show in the coming weeks. But thanks again, Evan. Send us.
As always, go Cavs. Wear a mask. Please vote if you haven't. I just submitted my absentee ballot today. Practice social distancing and Black Lives Matter.
Talk to y'all Monday.